The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Phil has to untangle himself out of the cords of his computer.
Good morning.
Here we go.
Oh, well, you already got that part.
Is everyone in our chairs? Are we all here?
Yes.
Well, it's always
nice. Working?
Always nice to pull into the station. There's a running ambulance out front. It's like, do they know something we don't know?
Yeah, no, the ambulance was not for me.
Yeah, well, the ambulance, I hope nobody calls them because they won't be able to get there. They don't have any gas. I don't know how long they've been sitting there with the motor running.
And they're asleep.
The driver appears to be asleep.
Yeah. That's another sighting we had. So,
well, we won't mention the name of the ambulance to the company.
Mercy Medical Center.
Guilty.
Dignity Health.
But feel good that they will be well rested when they come to your call.
That, is that like Dr. Feel Good?
Yeah, something
where are we
like
going?
That. Hey, you're listening to We the People Radio on KCNR 1460.
Still in the back of my bag.
We have, who do we have this morning? We have Dennis.
We have Dennis Presbury, but Terry's going to call us first and give us a Jefferson update.
That's right.
Provided a... did you actually get that number that I told you? Oh, yeah. My God. Bob's like Rain Man for phones. I don't think Rain Man actually used the phone, though, so. Oh, my
definitely,
goodness.
Definitely did not use the phone. No, but he bought his underwear at Walmart.
Kmart. Get it right.
Excellent driver.
He was an excellent driver. That's a good point.
Ow.
Oh, yeah.
I've never watched that movie.
It's going to be one of those kind of days. Hey, so just in case you were wondering, you can join us on the chat in case you don't want to call in and be entangled in this melee. You can always join us on the chat, and all our information about our guest who will be on in about, 10, 15 minutes-ish is Dennis Presbury from Protecting the Valley. We're going to learn about Central Valley water issues from the folks who...
The water problems they're having down there, and they are having problems.
Of course, and they have had for quite some time. So instead of hearing about what the government thinks, because we all know that story is just a wee bit tainted, we're going to hear from the folks actually affected by the problem, and that's coming up pretty quick. All that info is on wethepeopleradio.us. If you'd like to call us, since we always forget to give you the phone number, it is 530-605-4567. So you have two options, chat room at wethepeopleradio.us and phone in 530-605-4567. Our topics tend to all be about limited government, fiscal responsibility, following the Constitution, kind of a big umbrella, and they tend to all pretty much hit home there. With hopefully enough wide variety to make you happy. We have a lot of good stuff in the archives. Robert Exter, big thank you to him for doing the archives. He keeps track of the webpage and all that, so you can always look back. Shows about CARB and all sorts of things. It's a great place to get informed even if you don't listen to the archives, if you just want to read about them online. There's quite a bit of information just on the pages. So, that being said, is Terry on the phone?
He's going to call us back in another minute or two.
Oh, well, here I was like hurrying. I will talk slower with the updates.
That's okay.
Well, let me just give you two a shout out.
Well, you just do it.
For last,
since we're all here.
I know we discussed it last Sunday morning. But we're a little more together this Sunday morning as opposed to last Sunday.
Really? I was thinking we were less, but yeah, I must have forgotten.
Well, because of the fundraiser I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And just what an outstanding job you and everybody else did making that happen.
Well, it wasn't me. It was Linda Kent.
Linda Kent was
Linda
the big
Kent is a machine.
Hero on that one. She did. She worked
Linda
hard.
Linda Kent from Sovereign
together.
Minds, boy. She worked her buns off. She and Denise and Treva and oh, my gosh, all the – there were just a handful of ladies, and they really, really pulled that off. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, we need to thank Wind River, too. Okay. The Banquet Center, those guys are great. They do an awesome job.
They did. I'll tell you what, it was amazing to me. That room was full. We had a great turnout, and the meals came out just
mostly everybody was eating at the same time, which never happens, and your food was hot.
And it was hot.
They are great to work with. I was just there Friday for the launch of their smoke-free facility. So for all those of you that, like me, who don't know if you have a gambling habit or not, you know, with slot machines, you can now find out. Because it's smoke-free down there. And actually, they had gone smoke-free at midnight. I was there at 1 in the afternoon for a press conference thing, and it had actually smelled better already. Because I was thinking, oh, it's not going to smell better right away. It'll take time. No, it smelled better already. So for those of you that are not cigarette smoke people or allergic or whatever, Wind River's open now. Kind of fun.
And the there were still people in the casino in spite of the smoking ban.
Actually, you know what was weird? They said that only 9% of their guests actually smoke. Not how many of them cared if there was smoke, blah, 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 but how many people actually who came into the casino, and they did this really long study. I was super surprised. They said only like 9% of the people actually smoked. So... and that whole day, when people came in, they said, oh, by the way, you know, we're not smoking today. They were really taking a head count, you know, at the door. They said not one person complained. So, actually, that kind of flew in the face of what I would consider logic, but I thought that was amazing.
So, the 91% triumphed.
Yeah, and actually, they're the only one in the whole state that is a... smoke-free all the way through their whole facility. Everybody has, like, smoking and non-smoking sections, which we all know how that works out. It all winds up being a lot of smoking or a little bit of smoking. It's never really non-smoking. No, they're the only one smoke-free facility, so kudos to them.
Yeah.
Nice move.
Yeah, it's funny. I was in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago, and it really seems odd to walk into a building now and see people smoking. It's almost like, hey, you can't do that. Wait a minute, I don't live here. Yeah, so it's not everywhere, folks. You got to appreciate it.
So our guys locally have set the bar a little bit higher, which is very cool. But they've been real good to the community, and they've been very good to our program. As far as second year, we've done the fundraiser there. So there you go.
All right, Terry is standing by now.
My entire update. So now we're going to hear what's going on in the state of Jefferson. Needed a how about a highlights reel, Terry?
Well, I can do that pretty quickly if you want. How you two doing?
You know what? We all three of us are in the proper chairs. We have our headphones on. It's Sunday morning. I don't know what the heck it is. It's something about Sunday. We're like hardwired to not fly out of bed at, you know, whatever.
Well, it's been a long week for you, I'm sure. I guess I can highlight it in about 3 or 4 minutes here very quickly on where we were, where we came from, and where we are. On September the 3rd, 2013, I got a phone call from Mark Baird, and he was set to take a declaration to the Board of Supervisors in Siskiyou County on the 4th. And he told me that night that, gosh, if we don't get this one, we're dead in the water. Well, as you know, on September the 4th, 2013, Siskiyou County voted 4-1 for a declaration to withdraw from the state of California.
Because I was at that
20 days after that, Modoc County voted 4-0 with one abstaining to sign a declaration to separate from the state of California. A couple of months after that, we went to Tehama County, and after a presentation on a Thursday night, we went back the following Tuesday, and the Board of Supervisors in Tehama County voted 4-1 to put a ballot initiative on the June ballot to vote on a separation from California to form the state of Jefferson. And also they were, the wording now does say that whatever the majority does or votes, whatever that majority vote is, that the Board of Supervisors will comply with that. So the last time this was done was 1994 when this issue went up and Tehama County voted 70% in favor of withdrawing from the state of California. Then we fast forward a little further, about a month down the road, we went and did a town hall in Chico at the Elks Lodge in Butte County. We had around 500 people. Then the next morning we went to Orland, and I thought, wow, if we had 50 people in Glenn County and Orland, that'd be pretty good. We had 300. 2 hours after that, we left, and we went to Willows, and we had another town hall, and we had 300 more. And the very next week, the Board of Supervisors in Glenn County voted 5-0 in favor of a declaration to withdraw from the state of California. Fast forward again to Del Norte County, they have voted 3-2 in favor of putting it on the ballot. where people vote. The last time that vote went up in 1992, it was 65% people in favor of withdrawing. Then we go to Yuba City, where Mark and I went down and talked to the Board of Supervisors down there, and that was about 3 weeks ago. They look like they're going to want to also sign a declaration. We sent them a declaration. We go back there on the 8th. We've been invited back on the 8th. And on the 25th of March at 6 o'clock, we found out Friday that we will be speaking in front of the Board of Supervisors in Sutter County that has invited us to come and speak about this issue of withdrawing from the state of California. And we are bringing a declaration with us. So the thing is really moving fast. I mean, when you stop and think about 5 or 6 months, we should still be in diapers, and this thing is just rolling just as fast as we can keep up with it.
This thing's messing up the house.
Yeah.
It's out of the diapers.
We were in Yreka last night, Terry, and we went up there for an event, and during the event it got kind of hot inside, so I stepped outside and just kind of walked up and down the block. And of course, all the businesses were closed, and I was kind of looking in the windows. And I walked past probably 10 businesses, and then 6 or 7 of them, there was something in there that said something about the state of Jefferson. So, I mean, it's of course, that's kind of where it hatched, but it was big time up there.
So you guys have had Mark Baird on before, and as you know, the way we're doing this is totally different than it's ever been done before with the declarations. First of all, it saves the county money, but without getting into all the explanation, the thing that we really have to be looking at is that people are understanding now that they're not represented. And the more people we talk to about Reynolds versus Sims and the situation we have with not having equal representation for larger counties in the state of California, the more people are getting engaged in this. And, yeah, it's been insane to the point of where we've had producers who produce programs on A&E, Discovery Channel, and History Channel sat down with us last Monday about 4 hours in a conference, and then we all went to dinner and chatted and stuff, and they wanted to do a reality series, but somehow I don't see myself with a long beard and blowing a duck call. So
no. Well,
I'm not really sure that's going to pan out the way they wanted it to, but they really, really, really want to do something maybe more in a documentary situation, but they do understand that this is the tip of the spear, and we now have 6 other states engaged with us. So it's funny how, you know, a little place like Siskiyou County can just say, hey, you know, we've had enough, and this thing has spread as far as Florida. So a lot of interesting things that are going on, really exciting. And again, it's one of those things where people are finally standing up and saying, hey, we've had enough. We need to be represented. I did talk to Congressman LaMalfa about this. He has been, you know, he is quite good when it comes to answering questions. And I believe when he says something, he means it. There may be people who don't agree with everything he does, but I think when he says something, he really does mean it. And I've never known him to tell me something or discuss something with me that he believed that he totally didn't back up. So there's that. I also had a long conversation with Jim Nielsen, and his concern was on the money. But with the money being in California at this point, we know now that we're about $420 billion with a B in debt. And the unfunded liability as of a couple of weeks ago is around $875 billion with a B. So we're about $1.2 trillion in debt in California. So I don't think it's a matter of whether or not, you know, 12 to 18 counties can exist as a state as much as it is that California, as we all know, economically can't survive what they're doing and what's happening here.
Yeah, and, you know, what would we ever do if we just didn't have the state, regulating all our folks out of business and, you know, getting everybody on all these great food stamp programs and stuff? You know, it'd be such a big drag if they were all working and everything.
Yeah, you know, and Tim Draper of Six Californias, we've had numerous conversations and some really lengthy ones. He actually called me on Christmas Eve, We've had a lot of conversations, and the way that he looked at what he was doing with six Californias was exactly what you're saying, and that is he was looking at the six Californias in a way to have California be more economically balanced and therefore create a better environment for business to thrive, not understanding that until you get it right in the legislative body, that's going to affect business. So he was sort of putting the cart before the horse in that we all know that legislation and regulation totally affects any business you do anywhere. And the way the states are divided up, he has three of his states that have very, very large counties in them, such as San Francisco, such as Los Angeles, and such as Sacramento. And the other folks in those counties, because of the Reynolds versus Sims situation, still won't have representation because of one man, one vote. So I asked him, I said, Tim, what do you want to do then? Create six other states with those counties? And his comment to me was, well, maybe we will. So I think that in a lot of cases the basis and the study and the facts that we're using and the way we're going about it is not only constitutional, but I really believe it has legs. And I'm not going to go into all that now. It's kind of lengthy, but just wanted to first of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity for the update too.
Well, yeah, because you know, different times of day, the state of Jefferson movement basically has a radio program from 8 to 9 on Saturdays here on the same station. So if you want to really catch the nitty gritty on this entire topic, Saturday mornings here 8 to 9.
Also on the website is jeffersondeclaration.net. Lots of good stuff on jeffersondeclaration.net. Great website.
Perfect. I wasn't sure. I always forget. It's like .net.org.what?
You know, Terry, last night I was talking to a fairly high-ranking state official, Highway Patrol. he told me, he said, you know, when the whole Jefferson thing started, he kind of poo-pooed the idea and wasn't really behind it. But just in the last few months, he's had some things happen to him, and he realizes that they're totally not represented up there. And he said he's totally behind the whole idea now. So you're having a lot of people, even state employees, that are behind this movement, which is kind of interesting, because you'd think they'd be the last ones that would want to upset their little apple cart, but not him. He's like, let's do it.
Yeah, they live here too.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, is we talk to a lot of elected officials, whether that be people that are city council to board of supervisors to state senators to state assemblymen to people in Congress. And we've talked to them on a level of not just us, but Maryland, Florida, et cetera. And, hey, we're all saying the same thing. You guys got a better idea, we're in. If you got a way that we can be represented and we can have our vote count, we're in. If you give us back our Article 4, Section 4 constitutional rights, we're in. So nobody has a better idea at this point.
No, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's kind of like, as opposed to, yeah, more of same. So not great. All right. Well, we need to take a quick break. Thank you, Terry, for popping
and
giving us the long and the short of it. That's Jefferson, easy for me to say, jeffersondeclaration.net is where you find all that info.
Perfect. And thanks, you guys. Have a great show. You always do. And we just love your show. It's great.
Well, we appreciate you guys driving all over the north end of the state, and I do mean all over. You and Sally have really burned the miles, and I know what that's like because I did it with you to get the tea parties going, so right on, Road Warrior.
Thank you, my dear.
I bet you're having deja vu.
Really? So we miss you.
But you don't have a driver.
We miss you.
You got to drive yourself this time.
I know.
Keep up the good work, Terry.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Okay, you are listening to We the People Radio. We're going to come back with Dennis Prosperi from Families Protecting the Valley and start talking about the Central Valley Water, I was going to say water project, but it's mostly the water problems. See you in 2 minutes.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. Then it's just your body. Then they go,
me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in.
If you can't do the horse, don't do
it.
What is it? Does your horse have eight legs?
He was rhythmic. Yeah, that nice one.
Bill failed as a horse. He's fired. All right, you might be back in with that. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
Hey, so you're rejoining We the People Radio just in case the sound effects threw you off. And you thought you'd been catapulted back to some earlier time.
Where am I, Wilbur?
Oh, Dennis, hang up now. Pretend you're not home. Get away. All right.
Hello?
Yeah. Perfect.
Hello? Am I on the right line?
That kind of craziness is going on here. Our guest is Dennis Prosperi. He's a Central Valley almond farmer. Are you an almond or an almond farmer? What are you guys down there?
I'm an almond and wine grape farmer.
Nice. Yeah, the guys up here always call them almonds. So, good. We get to call them almonds today. Yay.
They knocked the hell out of them.
He's currently the chairman of the Central California Almond Growers Association and serves as a board member of Families Protecting the Valley. So that's all I'll give on your bio, because I'm sure you can give us more. You guys have the greatest newsletter ever. If you want to keep track of what's going on in the Central Valley, these guys have just the greatest newsletter.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
That's how I found you. It's familiesprotectingthevalley.com. If you go there, I'm sure that's how I wound up getting the newsletter. Am I right?
Yes, you can go onto our website, and then you can click and put your email, and we automatically send out the email newsletters, usually one to two or three times a week, just depending on what we see out there, and we usually tie it to an article that people generally read, and then we put our preamble in front of it so we can explain what we think the article really says in some cases.
That's my favorite part. It's kind of like the news with commentary from real people about what actually is going on.
Right.
Which is great. Okay, so the problems are gigantic. Where would you like to start?
Well, you know, we've been fighting this water thing for many, many years. You know, originally Families Protecting the Valley, just give you a real brief history. We started Families Protecting the Valley back in, it was back around 2000 when we were fighting the Enron Zurich project here in Madera. I don't know if you heard about that water bank Enron was trying to put in. Anyway, it was basically a grab by Metropolitan for our groundwater, and we were able to stop that. And then we kind of went dormant with the organization. And then when the river restoration, the San Joaquin River Restoration Bill with Dianne Feinstein and Jim Costa fired up, we got really active trying to stop it. Unfortunately, we couldn't stop that bill from going through, which is part of the reason we're in this crisis we're in today, and which we said at the time was going to lead to this crisis. Unfortunately, we were right, which is not something you want to be right about, but we were. And so...
And that was the enter... That was the onset of the Delta smelt issue.
Yeah, well, right? There's two different parts, but basically the San Joaquin River wanted to restore it to, and there was over a 20-year lawsuit. The NRDC, which is a Natural Resources Defense Council, sued the federal government. Let me explain something real quickly. The dam, the sure. Milton Fryant Dam on the San Joaquin River, the main stem of the San Joaquin River, was built in the late 30s, and when they built the dam, Congress actually passed the law to appropriate and to authorize it, specifically said that the water would go down about 30, 40 miles, and then it would stop at a place called Gravelly Ford. And after that, it wouldn't go any further. So there was a warm water fishery for about 40 miles, but it wasn't hydrologically connected any longer to the rest of the San Joaquin River, Merced, and all the other rivers north of us into the Delta. And this was for 60 years. And the reason they did it was the groundwater was dropping back in the 20s and 30s, and so doing what they did, they were able to put over 1.1 million acres from basically south of Merced, Chowchilla, all the way down to Bakersfield, Kern County, were able to get about 1.4 million acre feet of water a year.
Wow.
And what they had to do to make this work, and you've been reading probably in the paper about the exchange contractors now and the water rights issue that's going on here in Los Banos, and those people had the original Miller and Lux, which I don't know if you ever heard of Miller and Lux, was the original land baron in California back in the 1800s. They had the original riparian water rights on the San Joaquin River. So what happened was, when the 1930s, when the government wanted to build a dam, they couldn't shut off the water because they had water rights for about 850,000 acre feet of water. Well, to bring them to water wasn't going to make the dam a feasible water project other than it would have been good for flood protection, and that's about it. So a deal was made, and they called it the exchange contract. And what they did is those people didn't give up their water rights. They exchanged them for the time for water out of the Delta. So the Delta-Mendota Canal was built. This is before the San Luis Project. The Delta-Mendota Canal was built out of the Delta, supplying them on 240,000 acres of land, 850,000 acre-feet of water. And the exchange was, as long as they got water in the Delta, then the Fryant farmers could use this water here. But if they, for whatever reason, they didn't get their water in the Delta, then they have first call on this water. Well, since it's built in the 40s, we're talking 70 years now, it's never happened until this year. And a lot of it's, and the reason it's never happened is because they manage the system a whole lot different than they are in the last few years. And so anyway, that's kind of how the plumbing works. And so the exchange contractors, as long as they get 75% of their contract, which is about 650,000 acre feet, they can't call on our water. If they get less than that, then they have the rights to call on the San Joaquin River again. The problem is when you release the water down the river past Gravelly Ford, it's a really sandy area, and it just it loses about 350 acre feet a day in 13 miles. So you can imagine how much.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's not a lot.
Huge. And they knew that back in the 30s when they engineered it, and that's why they specifically in the federal law said the river will stop there. The federal government has a permit to operate the dam from the state of California, because you probably know the state of California has water, has all the surface water rights. And they gave a permit to the federal government. The federal government built the dam and then contracted the water to like 25 or 26 water districts over this 1.1 million acres on the east side of the San Joaquin Valley. Then the San Luis Project was built and Shasta and all that, bringing water to the west side of the valley. But the problem is, this year, that really exasperated the situation was, you know, it was kind of dry last year, and they, in 2012, on November and December, they thought they were looking at a wet spring coming because we had a wet fall that year, and they dumped over 850,000 acre feet of water in the Delta, above and beyond normal, to help the fish, supposedly, which didn't really help them, but that was the plan. And then they figured they would fill up in the spring with the dams. Well, historically in California, you ran the system the other way. You filled up your dams, and then if you had excess water, you spilled it. The last few years, what we've been doing is spilling the water early based on what we think is going to come in, based on there's estimates of weather forecasting and what have you, and then hoping it fills. Well, we went from filling and dumping to dumping and praying, okay?
That's just illogical. I mean, that's like spending your bank account down to zero, hoping that you get a raise this year. It's
right, and
stupid.
To make it worse, after they, because you remember in 2013 in the spring, January, February, March, April, we got no rain here, not even close to what they thought was going to be average to fill the reservoir. So the reservoirs, San Luis Reservoir especially, went into last summer way, way down. In fact, it ended up in October, November, like at 200,000 acre feet of water or something like that out of the 2 million it holds. But here's the interesting part. The governor did not declare an emergency, which really, we were in a drought in that respect for lack of water in the reservoirs way back then, in November of here, this last November. Although we shouldn't have been, but they dumped the water. So whether we should or shouldn't have, it's what happened. So instead of declaring an emergency then, you know, he said, no, we're not in a drought yet. We're not in a drought yet. November, December, January, and then finally, he finally had declared emergency. Well, the problem is, while he waited, all the upper reservoirs were flushing water in the ocean for the fish. So it was a smart political move, because if Governor Brown would have declared emergency in November, October, because obviously the San Luis Reservoir was a mud puddle, but and that's where LA gets its drinking water, and that's where all the farms, 1 point some million acres of farms on the west side of the valley all the way down to Bakersfield, get their water. And now, you know, from been reading the papers, they're all zero allocation, including the cities. What happened was, instead of declaring emergency in September, October, November, which then would have allowed him to circumvent the environmental rules and get that reservoir full, they just kept saying it's going to rain, it's going to rain, it's going to rain. And then all of a sudden, they get into January and February, and there's no rain. And so then they declare emergency, which at that point, the environmentalists couldn't complain because, well, okay, some fish are not going to get water, but there was no more water. Folsom Dam was down to 17%. You know the numbers. Everybody was out of water. Well, the farmers down here couldn't complain. I mean, they weren't happy about the water being dumped the year before, but the reality is you can scream all you want about turning on the pumps. There was no water to pump. So it was a smart political move because it kept both sides from killing him. But the reality is, it exasperated the problem. So in the meantime, One other thing kicked in. The Westland Water District and some of the people on the west side who had carryover water you may have read about from the year before that they didn't use, and they carried over, but it was paper water. In other words, they had 350,000 acre foot of water that they technically didn't use and was supposed to be in the San Luis Reservoir, but the government was running a little Ponzi scheme because the reality of the water wasn't there. Okay.
Okay.
So farmers are trading water amongst each other. Like one almond grower says, okay, I'm short of water next year. I'll pay you, you know, $1,000, $1,200 an acre foot for your all. And so maybe a tomato grower says, okay, I won't raise tomatoes. I'll sell you my water. Well, when it got to this spring and they're going, okay, where's the water? Well, it wasn't in the dam. Now, normally, and they've been doing this for years, but in the past, the spring runoff, they would pump and fill the reservoir, you know, November, December, and then you pay back last year. I mean, they've been behind, okay, let's put it bluntly. Well, this year, when there was nothing, the pumps were off, they couldn't fill it up. So all of a sudden, they went to the west side growers and said, look, we're not going to allow you guys carryover. And these guys came unglued because some of these people paid fortunes for this water that didn't exist. So that's when Dianne Feinstein and all the politicians got involved. So you've got to honor last year's water carryover because these people bought it and it's been paid for. The government collected money, and technically it should have been behind the reservoir, okay, but it wasn't. Well, that started the chain reaction. The minute the government, the Bureau said, okay, we're going to honor the carryover, now the first 350,000 acre feet that comes out of the Delta to fill in the San Luis Reservoir is not for this year's supply. It's got to pay back last year's supply. You follow me? Okay, so now the exchange contractors who have the highest priority on the system are going, well, wait a minute, where's our 650,000 acre going to come from? Well, it's going to come after their 350, but, you know, we get rains and the pumps and we'll get you, well, it didn't. Okay, so then they said, well, then that means you get to go on the San Joaquin River and take the all our water to make up to get to your 650. Well, the problem is, because Dianne Feinstein and Jim Costa's legislation into the San Joaquin River Restoration Bill that allowed releases for the salmon run, they dumped most of that water in the last 3 or 4 months too. Okay, so that reservoir is down to 176,000 acre feet of water, of which 140,000 acre feet is not usable to dead pool space at the bottom of the lake. And that only left enough water for a few districts that had carryover and enough for Orange Cove and Lemon Cove and Lindsay and Terrabella, which use that water for drinking water. So the exchange contractor, who had the oldest historical water rights in the whole system back to 1870, all of a sudden wake up and they got nothing on one side, potentially nothing on the other side. So the government steps in and says, okay, we're going to cut your 75%. First, they cut them from 100% to 75. Then they're going to cut your 75 to 40. And they said, well, we can live with 40 and we'll get some from Fryant. But then in the meantime, they're dumping water out of Fryant the whole time this is going on. Then now the government stepped in and said, hey, we have a public health and safety issue. You know, cities are running out of water. Santa Barbara, Solvang, all these places need water. So we may have to cut you, which it hasn't been, the decision hasn't been made yet, by the way. They've told them about 2 weeks ago, we may have to cut you to 0 or 5 or 10%. Well, you got to remember, a lot of these farmers in this 240,000 acres don't have wells because they've gotten their 4 acre foot per acre allocation since, you know, 1900. I mean, there's never been a situation, so there's no point in them having wells. So they're actually in the worst shape now because they're really not geared up for a drought. In the meantime, just to throw this whole thing in perspective on the San Joaquin River, just to give you some numbers, the river restoration was passed in 2008 or 9, I can't remember the year, stated that there was basically three parts to it. There was a schedule that said how and the interim releases would go, the experimental flows, and at what point salmon would be reintroduced, and there was a time schedule. There was also supposed to be the river restoration, all the work to rebuild the channel from Fireball all the way back up to the Merced River, so you can have a hydrological connection back again that it was lost 50, 60 years ago. And that's about a $1 billion project. Then there was part of the agreement was also to take the water, pump it when it got to the Delta, back in the system, get it down the aqueduct, and then build some kind of cross conveyance back into the Fryant system down in Kern County, so the Fryant farmers would lose water in this river restoration, but only the evaporation and percolation loss. The rest would actually be recirculated after it did this job for the fish.
Okay.
Back in the Fryant system. The unfortunate thing is the government, like the high-speed rail and everything else they do, they ran out of money. And there is no money coming. So here we have a river that is not hydrologically connected. We don't have the pumpback facilities. But we have this time schedule that says on 2010 we released so much water in 2000. So they're releasing the water. Fish aren't getting it. We're not getting it. It's just going away. Okay? Because there's a law that says they can do it. So So this year they've started releasing water, like, because of the stipulation in the agreement to release. Well, as they're releasing, just to give you some numbers, on January 6th of this year, there was 440 acre feet a day coming into Milton Lake, Fryant Dam, which is very low because naturally it's a drought, and there was like 1,200 acre feet a day leaving. By January 29th, wow, because it was really dry, there was 12 acre feet a day coming in, which is almost as much as two pumps pump,
yeah,
and 1,500 acre feet a day leaving. Okay, they theoretically, they had the law said they could release water till March 1st for river restoration, then the new water year would start and they could release if there was so much up there. Well, it got down to, on January 29th, there was 198,000 acre feet of water in the dam. If you don't count the 140 at the bottom, and you count about 40,000 of carryover, they left 18,000 acre foot of what we call usable water, and those three cities needed 10 to have drinking water. So the government basically agreed to stop the river restoration. They tapered it off down to 100. Basically, they tapered off to just enough public health and safety water, and then they wasted the rest.
Okay. What a bunch of psychos.
I know. So
Dennis, let us take a really, we've got to take a really quick break, okay, or we'll be up against the, we have plenty of time too. We're not pushed. We totally have another hour because we need to spell out for people what river restoration is. We can't assume people actually know all the evil being perpetrated. We really want to make sure we spell that out for folks. All right. So, you're listening to We the People Radio. We are talking about the Central Valley water issue that is really the California water issue. The environmental policy run amok. We're here on KCNR 1460 AM. Tell you what, if you're not on the chat room, you're not having any fun. All the commentary that's not fit to say is on the chat room. WeThePeopleRadio.us. Click the listen button. Oh my goodness, we've had some interesting alternatives for river restoration. Dennis, you would enjoy. One of our folks on there said, "Can I roll it back to actually find it?" No. Dopey am I. Anyway, she basically said you throw beer cans in the river, right? It's for fish habitat. I mean, people are just so sick of this habitat craziness and all this magical restoration that comes with a free unicorn. It just, you know, they're just, it's making people nuts.
No, and Dennis, what you said earlier about allowing the farmers down there to have, what, 3 or 4 acre feet, that's not enough to do anything with. I mean, they can't even grow anything with that little water, can they?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at, and first of all, you know, the state project, which is south of Westlands, which is all the way down to San Diego, all the cities and farms, they're at zero allocation right now. All the Westlands project, which is federal, is at zero. The federal project on the east side of the valley, Fryant system, we're at zero. And the exchange contractor, who have the historic water rights in front of all of us, or they don't know until another week or two whether they're at 0, 5, or 10%, which is not enough water to farm. So it's a disaster, but it's what happens when you make the first Ponzi scheme move, you know, a year ago, and then they were hoping for rain, and then you make the second mistake, and then you're hoping for rain. By the time you get to the third mistake, it's a dominoes.
No, it's done. You know, years ago, I went on a tour up at Shasta Dam, and the park ranger or whatever he was up there giving the tour said that the original purpose of building the Central Valley Project he asked everybody, what do you think that was for? And people were like, well, to create power. And he said, nope, because the number one, it wasn't flood control. It was to give water to the farmers down in the valley and have that water stored when they needed it to grow crops. That's why that system was built. And now it's turned into this save the salmon recreation. It's ridiculous.
Well, we're even behind the ducks now because the wildlife refuges are still getting water.
And people are screaming because there's not enough water to water ski. I mean, where do they think their food's going to come from?
Okay, so talk about the river restoration. I know we only have a few minutes till the top of the hour. We can pick it up on the other side. But when you say river restoration, I mean, most people are thinking, well, that sounds like a good thing.
Well, I mean, river restoration, you know, first of all, you got to understand there's a trade-off. By making this exchange contract, we were able to go bring in a river that the San Joaquin River puts out about 1.8 million acre-feet a year. We capture about 1.4 and spread it out over 1.1 million acres, which that, along with some well water, the two are conjunctive use. You know, one helps percolate in the ground, keep the groundwater up, then you pump some of that. But when you go, and then that allowed the 800,000 to come from the delta, so it basically doubled, almost doubled the supply of water in the San Joaquin Valley. Well, when you undo that, you're basically cutting everything in half. And obviously, you've got a lot of land and a lot of productivity and a lot of cities that are, you know, it's billions of dollars of revenue that's going to stop. And now what's happening in the last few years, it hasn't stopped because everybody's digging wells and pumping. And I'm sure you're hearing all the talk out of Sacramento about groundwater overdraft.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, naturally, if you take away, we've said this for years, when the environmentalists get the surface water, they're going to come for the groundwater because farmers are going to try to survive and they're going to overpump because they don't have a choice. And that's what's happening. And now the groundwater in the Madera area, we're at dropped, you know, in Chowchilla, dropped 16 foot last year in 1 year, and this year's probably going to double that. Well, what we're doing, pumping this much, is not sustainable. And I agree with the state. But the state, instead of solving the problem on the surface water side, they're exasperating the problem, and then they go, oh, the next problem is, you know, and they
they're literally creating a domino of problems.
Exactly.
Because all that water went to the ocean, right? Didn't we send all that fresh water to the ocean?
Right, they sent, well, probably between the two, probably over 1.2 million acre feet went in the ocean.
When you're looking at for fish?
For the fish. On top of the normal flow, you got to remember there's always water going in the ocean. The thing I want people to understand is, let's put this in perspective. Environmentalists don't like dams. They want to tear down four dams in Northern California. They want to tear down our dam. In a drought like this, if this was, you know, 200 years ago, which we've had droughts before, and there was no dams, because obviously they weren't here, every river from Kern County all the way up to Sacramento would be dry right now. All that water, that little bit behind the dams now would have run out months ago. And you would have had saltwater intrusion. You would have had dead fish. I mean, this was nature. I mean, what you're seeing now is environmentalists are saying, we want to control the dams to run the water in the river the way we think nature should run. Okay, but in a real world, without dams, Fryant, Middleton, all these dams would have, with no rain in November, December, January, would have all been trickles. Like I told you, there's only 12 acre feet a day coming into Middleton from natural flow. Well, what would have happened? The fish would have died. Then you get a wet year, and the water comes, and, you know, we had these 200 year droughts, and the fish came back. But, so, you know, they want to control, they want to create nature in their vision. You follow me?
Oh, yeah.
But if you say, let's really go back to nature, when, you know, they don't want to live in teepees, okay? But the reality is, the economics, farmers have been able to produce record crops and keep their gross income up the last few years by borrowing into their savings account, which is the groundwater. But that's about ready to come to a screeching halt, too. And so they're really going to have a catastrophe.
Well, what's going to happen with all this money they paid, and now they're not going to get their water? Are they going to get their money back? Because, you know, our illustrious president was out there about just a few weeks ago, and didn't he promise relief?
He promised money for the workers that lose their jobs. He promised aid for the cities. He's not going to get the farmers anything. The farmers in the state water projects, which are south of Westlands, all the way to Tehachapi, they pay $600 an acre, half for years, whether they get a drop of water or not.
Oh, that's always great. You get an automatic bill. Hey, Dennis, we have 5 minutes to listen to some news here. Sorry. We've got a little news break, and then we'll be back with you at 9:05. So you can go somewhere, but don't hang up on us.
Okay, real good.
Everybody, we're talking to Dennis Prosperi, Central Valley almond farmer. We'll be back with you here at We the People Radio. Join us online, We the People Radio.
.us. I'm gonna get some water.
I'm gonna go run that faucet.
Oh, yeah.
It's 9 o'clock at KCNR, Shasta Redding.
Speak, Bill, or forever hold your peace.
Well, I was just I was sitting here thinking about our wonderful Central Valley Water Project.
And explains the silence.
I know. Sitting with my finger on my cheek.
I know. I'm like, hey, are you
going to
say something? Actually, we've got to first tell people that.
Oh, yeah. That's right. This is the talking show.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right. This is We the People Radio.
This is like court.
Yeah.
You know, speak up. The recorder is going. Hey, so you're listening to We the People Radio. You have Aaron and Bill and Bob here in the studio today. We are talking to, speaking with. It's talk radio, but we're speaking with Dennis Prosperi. He is a Central Valley almond grower. He's currently the chairman of the Central California Almond Growers Association. Serves as a board member for Families Protecting the Valley. They have the best newsletter out there if you want to keep track of what's going on in the world of water. Go to familiesprotectingthevalley.com and click on send me your newsletter. Usually that means send me a bunch of junk mail. No junk mail. Every article is really, really good. They take all the stuff that's out there in the news, and then they tell you what it really means, which is great because that's what most of us wanted anyway. So if you want to decode the water issue, that's your first and best stop.
You know, when I was when I was flying back from Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago, I was kind of looking out the window and going over all these lakes from Nevada all the way to Sacramento. You saw this big brown ring around them, and I mean, we're this time of the year; those lakes should be full to the top, they are just mud puddles. And last night, going over Lake Shasta. It's amazing how low that lake is. I mean, it's as low now as it should be at the end of summer. So
yeah, there are parts when you go over Pitt River Bridge, you'll probably be looking just at nothing but dirt.
Oh, it'll just be a river going through there. It's going to be bad. It's unbelievably low.
Okay, so Dennis, kind of to encapsulate a little bit from the first hour for folks that maybe just tuned in. Bottom line is they released a ton of water down there in the Central Valley that should have been held back in case of drought, but they released it before the rain came. And now the rain didn't come. And
Right, exactly.
Here
they
we are.
Releasing actually from October, November of 2012 and the San Joaquin River up until 2 or 3 weeks ago, they were still releasing even after the governor declared drought. And everybody says, it's Dianne Feinstein flew out here and says, we've got to do all we can. The president came, we're going to do all we can. While they were talking, they were releasing water. So it's like the magician, don't look at the left hand, because the right hand's in your pocket, okay? And so you would really look at the numbers, how much water was wasted. Yes, there's a drought. Yes, there's lack of rain. But we've been in droughts. I've been farming for 43 years here. And we've been in droughts, back in 76, 77, 78. And this one is probably as bad at this point, but we were able to get, all the districts were able to get 40, 30, 40, 20, 50% water allocation. We're looking at zero everywhere. Most of that is partially drought and partially mismanagement. Well, when you change the Environmental Species Act and you've changed all these laws, you've got a problem. And if you really watch what was going on politically, one of our articles, you remember we said transfers for who? I don't know if you saw that
one. Oh, yeah.
And the reason was because, if you remember, Devin Nunes, our congressman from down south, came out and said, with a House Representative bill that passed, that basically said he wanted to change the Environmental Species Act or at least temporary restraint so we can turn the pumps on at the Delta, and two, stop the river restoration program for 2 years until we get the reservoirs back up. Well, Dianne Feinstein, Gary Mendy, all the politicians and the rest of them said this is irresponsible, it's divisive, you heard all the comments. But the reality, they had no alternative. Then when it got really serious, they came out and said with the president and Dianne Feinstein, said, okay, we've got a plan. We're going to have a Senate bill. It's going to bring you $300 million. Oh, by the way, that bill has never gone in the hopper yet, and it still hasn't been voted on yet, and nothing's passed yet. But they came out and said, we're going to do all these things, and we're going to get more welfare food for the poor, food banks, money for the food banks for the farmers, workers, that people lose their jobs. But two things she said were off the table: suspending the ESA laws and stopping the river restoration, which, translation, they're going to continue doing what they're doing that got us here, and the rest is all smoke and mirrors. Well, they're supposed to negotiate between the House and the Senate, you know, to come up with a conference bill, but the Senate hasn't passed anything yet. So the House has. And the reason I think they're not is because she doesn't want to be put in a position to have to negotiate to actually create some water here. And so the reality is, it's a disaster in the making. In the meantime, the governor, back in, I think it was September or October, somewhere in the end of 2013, appointed a new chairman of the State Water Resources Control Board, Felicia Marcus, as I believe her name. She was the Western Director for the NRDC, the same people that sued to take the river, San Joaquin River, and dump the water. The same people that sued to shut the pumps off of the Delta and restrict pumping for the smelt. The people who sued to create this disaster are now in charge of the State Water Resources Control Board, determining how much water in the next 2 weeks the exchange contractors are going to get.
That's great. Because okay, you know so what? I can't think of anybody who's got a better better handle on it than those guys. That's fantastic.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were the most radical environmental group of all the environmental groups, and they're the most litigious, you know, as far as suing. Let me explain one other issue. When we signed, when the farmers, everybody agreed to the San Joaquin River restoration, like I say, there was two parts to the deal. One was restoring environmental flows, and number two, water management goal, which was recapturing the water and bringing it back into the system. And they were co-equal goals in the legislation. The problem is the government hasn't funded any of it, and nor do they have the money to fund it, so we're just wasting the water in the meantime. In the meantime, while that's going on, you've got the government, while that was going in the legislation, the NRDC filed a lawsuit to restrict the pumps. Well, we can't get the water back from the Delta for the water management goals for the San Joaquin River if the pumps can't run. So the deal was dead from the day it passed.
Sure.
Okay. So what you've got is basically a man-made disaster, and naturally the drought, you know, tipped it over the edge. But I don't think these people really, you've been reading all the articles about we shouldn't be raising almonds, they're exporting almonds to China, and they're using a lot of water, the trees, which is true, they use a lot of water. But for years, when I was a kid, all we heard about was we shouldn't be raising cotton. It's a too low a value crop. The environmentalists said cotton should be gone. Well, there is no more cotton. Okay, so now we got almonds that are high value crop that they want us to raise. Now it's too high value crop, and we're making money selling them. You know?
Yeah, how dare you? That's the whole problem right there.
Well, let's dig up all the trees, and we'll teach those Chinese a lesson for trying to buy almonds from us. But the reality is there is trees being dug up, and there's going to be a lot of trees dying this summer because there's some people out there have no water, and these trees aren't going to survive.
And it's not like you plant almond. I mean, you know, for those idiots that think almonds come from the store, you know, almond trees don't just plant them and almonds leap off of them. How long does it take to get a mature almond
about
tree?
4 to 5 years to really, full production is about 6 years. Trees last about 20, 25 years. So you can see it's a big investment and a long time to wait for the first crop. Usually is around the fourth year, but real commercial crops are around the fifth or sixth year. And so it's a long term investment, obviously.
Well, I had a conversation with a gentleman from Southern California here a few weeks ago, and what he would tell you is, you know, you really don't need almonds. You don't need that many. What I would tell him is, what about row crops? Rice. I mean, these are
well,
things
you've got all your tomatoes. You guys grow
everything
down there.
We raise 230 some crops in California. It's a $44 billion value crops in California, just at the farm value, not even counting, you know, because I'm also in the almond packing business, and we're talking $44 billion at the farm gate. Now you can quadruple that when it starts. I mean, for example, a bottle of wine. The average bottle of $4 bottle of wine has probably got 50 cents or 30, 40 cents worth of grapes in it. Okay, so you can see the extra money that's rotating through the economy. To say we don't need rice, we don't need wine, we don't need anything. They're right, we don't. We won't have $44 billion coming in, huh?
That's right. No, we'll get it all out of South America. I mean, go to the grocery store and look where your
vegetables
are
coming from.
Let's get all the
food from China because
right.
Their standards
plus,
are so
plus, we have a state.
High.
We have a state that's running budget deficits and wants to build $60 billion trains. And where do they think the money's going to come from? Shutting down the economy?
Yeah, exactly.
It's ludicrous. We should be spending money to build the infrastructure like they did, like you made the point earlier, when they built all this system, we should have been continue building infrastructure for the future, and we didn't. You know, because one thing people don't realize, most of these projects, like the Fryant project up here in Middleton and the San Joaquin River, the farmers bought and paid for that over the last 50 years. The one in Don Pedro, Pine Flat, all these projects were paid for with farmers in their water rates for the last 50 years. In fact, MID, our district, just borrowed a bunch of money to finally make the final payment. We own the concrete, but we don't get the water. Okay? Now they're seeing there's 40 million people in California, and public health and safety comes first, which we understand. But why didn't you build infrastructure for the new people instead of just taking the water away from your economic base? You follow me?
Oh, yeah.
The real solution in California is you've got to get from San Francisco to San Diego on the ocean. Because right now, Metropolitan, which is Southern California, 20 million people, and all the San Francisco area is on the Sierra Nevadas, either through the Delta or Hetchy Hetchy. If you put the people on the coast, which are 85% of the population, on the ocean and put, you know, with desalt and free up that water to stay in the valley, you win economically both ways. I mean, there's 15,000 desalt plants in the world. 15,000. There's like one in California. Okay.
It takes energy to run them, or
the environmentalists don't like them because you're taking the salt out of the water and putting it back in the ocean. Okay. And they think that's going to degrade the ocean, unbelievably. You can believe that.
But we have to keep flushing the water out of the Delta because the salmon are in there, and they might get salt on them, although they spend most of their time in the ocean.
Well, let's look at the Delta. You've got rivers coming into the Delta. I know that you have to keep pumping water in the Delta not to get salt moving back up the river. But, you know, in Holland, you know, how many thousand years ago they built the dikes to keep the fresh water separate from the ocean water? Okay, so when the tide comes up, it does. Right now when the tide comes up, we have to push that much more fresh water to keep the salt water back. Well, maybe if you built some kind of barriers to separate salt and fresh water, we'd have a lot more water. But, I mean, everything can be solved with a little bit of ingenuity and technology, and that's what Americans did for the first 200 years we were here. Now, all of a sudden, we want to go back to nature quasi by somebody's vision of nature. You follow me?
Yeah, it's all being retooled at their behest. I mean, you know, right. And hey, if you follow it, you know, unicorns will come back. We're going to see brontosaurus. I was listening to something last night on progressive radio on the way home. I just listened to torture myself. And they were talking about how we can't possibly lose another species on the earth. My God, if we lose one more, we are done as a civilization. And I'm thinking, T-Rex, brontosaurus. I mean, we've lost a lot of things over the years. And, you know, we've done okay. We need to take a really quick break. Sorry, I was on a little tirade there. Take a little break from our tirade. To thank our advertisers. God love them. And you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're speaking with Dennis Prosperi. Check out their website, familiesprotectingthevalley.com. Awesome site. Amazing, amazing newsletters. Be right back.
So many lies twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Problem is, I do remember things. I do know.
I know. We're actually all old enough to remember when the world made some sense.
Yeah. California was like the seventh largest economy on the planet.
Yeah.
Now we're in the toilet.
Yeah. Well,
we've
got a rope around its neck now.
With no water to flush.
Just start pulling. So, hey, during the commercial break, Charles called in. So we should probably get to Charles before he winds up being our hostage on hold. Charles? You have a question or a comment on the Central Valley issue?
Well, hearing about how the depth to which the state and the feds are really screwing things up south of the Delta. I mean, we always knew, and or at least suspected that they were screwing things up south of the Delta as they screw things up north of the Delta, but the depth to which they screw things up, we're seems like we're just now finding out about. And it's interesting that after the state and the feds screw things up south of the Delta, they turn their eyes northward and demand our water to cover up for their screw-ups.
Oh, yeah.
They want to take it via the peripheral canal and the Twin Tunnels Project. Also, that state water bond, SB 848, the amount of money available for water storage projects, it used to be $3 billion. It's down to $1.
And there's also money in there for removing the Klamath dams up north.
Oh, yeah, $250 million for dam removal. And there's a whole bunch of money for conservancies to buy up conservation easements.
Yeah.
Oh, don't you love that?
Absolutely.
And money for integrated regional water management stuff, regulatory commitments out the wazoo. So
we have to study it. We just can't do it. We have to study it.
Well, we can't let actual people in industry work on it because we can only have the environmental groups because they're the only ones qualified, apparently.
Well, I mean, there's so much, you know, bad being done. If you're asking the question, is it mistake or is it malice?
Oh, it's malice.
You know,
given the sheer volume and gravity of all of the stuff that they're foisting upon us, whether it be the river the so-called river restoration, which is not restoration at all,
right,
to the peripheral canal, to the so-called Bay Delta Conservation Plan.
Hey, let's let Dennis jump in on this.
You know, the point asked is if this is, you know, malice or...
Thanks, Charles, for calling.
Or just screwing up. I'd like to make a point. I think the fundamental flaw in the whole system is the people who think like socialists think that the pie is always big enough, we just need to divide the pieces a little smaller. Well, they've done that in the water deal until now there's no water for nobody. The capitalist says, well, if there's not enough pie, let's bake another pie. Okay, and that's a fundamental difference between the environmental movement and the rest of us. And the reason I point that out is, you know, I've been to some conferences. I've heard a lot of, I read a lot, just like I'm sure you do, and you hear the statement that we shouldn't be farming the deserts. I want your listeners to, they're going to hear more of that. We shouldn't be farming almonds. We shouldn't be farming cotton. We shouldn't be farming alfalfa, which means the dairies and the cows don't get food, but that's another subject. But the reality is, irrigated agriculture, the way we irrigate today, is a relatively new phenomenon in the last 3,000 years. I mean, it's the last 100 years with the adaptation of pumps and wells. Farming deserts did not always happen. But also, the world population back then was less than 1 billion people, and every so often they had a famine when they didn't rain the right amount or they couldn't store the food, and people died. Now, the world's population has gone from 1 billion to 7 billion in the last 100 years, mostly because of irrigation and food and reasonably priced food. And also because we farm in the deserts where the climate is consistent, where you get consistent production. My relatives farm in Italy, because that's where I'm from originally, and my family was. And over there, they'd plant vegetables, and some years it would rain so much the vegetables would rot. Next year it wouldn't rain enough, and they didn't have enough. When you farm based on nature, you're going to have food at times, and times you're not. It's not quite going to be cheap. It's not always going to be plentiful. Farming the deserts all over the world has created massive amounts of cheap, reliable, clean food. Consistent. Now, the key issue is it sustainable? Probably not if you're having to pump groundwater. Our forefathers realized that and built these systems. Instead of building more and building the desalt plants and doing these things, we're reverting back to the socialist mentality that there's enough there, we just got to split the pie a little thinner. I mean, I farm also, if you guys don't know this, I also have a ranch of grapes and almonds in Australia.
Yeah.
Now, here's a country of 20 million people building 5 or 6 desalt plants in the last few years. We've got 40 million people in California. We can't build 2, okay? So they're thinking ahead. They farm in deserts like we do. They see they don't have enough water, and they're taking the profits from the current agricultural productivity of their economy and regenerating back to protect their investment. For example, if we've got a $44 billion industry that's going to shrink, maybe if we would have taken all the money all these years instead of throwing it away and like they want to do with high-speed rail and built the infrastructure to perpetuate this, farming the deserts and feeding 7 billion people. What the environmentalists don't tell you is they want to go back to nature, but they don't tell you which 3 billion of the 7 billion they wanted to see die.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, because food is either going to be scarce or too expensive, huh?
And depopulation is very much part of their agenda.
Exactly. And I think, so I don't think it's... when you want to use the word malice, it's not because they're stupid. I've dealt with the NRDC. They're very intelligent people.
They're cunning.
Jared Huffman, who's a congressman now, okay, you may have heard.
Yes.
Okay, well, he was the second attorney, the lead attorneys on the lawsuit with the NRDC against us and the San Joaquin River. The NRDC has strategically placed its people. I use the analogy, NRDC to water is what Goldman Sachs is to international banking. Okay? They got their people everywhere. And they've spent years to get those people at the head of the State Water Resource Control Board, at the head of a congressional committee passing legislation to do certain things. My question is, now that we're in this drought, and they have the ability in the next few months, and they've already showed in the last few months, to put a dagger in the heart of ag, will they miss their opportunity? I don't think so. Unfortunately, I hate to say this, I think they're going to do whatever it takes in their ideological belief. If 400,000 acres of trees have to die and whole communities are ruined economically, in their mind, that's what has to happen in their vision. You follow me?
Oh, yeah, because they're, you know, the one thing that characterizes the left, I mean, we can pull a lot of characterization, but one thread that has run through everything for many, many years is the politics of scarcity.
Right.
They love and feed and thrive on scarcity.
Right. And that's why President Obama comes here with $300 million to patch up everybody's losses. Governor Brown, who could have appointed somewhat more analytical people to these positions, points not only to somebody far to the left, but the actual leaders of the movement to shut the water off the last 20 years.
Well, okay. You know, another argument I got was, you know, the farmers just use way too much water. But, you know, when you drive down through the Central Valley and even the Upper Sacramento Valley, you look at the way irrigation has changed over the years.
Yeah, it's all drip.
I mean, it's all drip. I mean, they don't water with sprinklers anymore. I mean, everybody is on drip systems using a fraction of the water, but still there's not enough.
No, well, there's never going to be enough if you dump and then pray instead of fill and spill. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you should fill all the reservoirs. First of all, back in January, February, November, we saw a problem. You know, you should have been conserving as much as you could, but they continued to dump. Even the governor said, well, it's too early to call a drought. If you go back and look at his press release back in early January, it's too early to call a drought because we might still get rain. Well, that was a hope and pray policy. When the reality is, the dams were already too low. Okay, he should have been shutting down and conserving then. And then if it rained a lot, well, okay, then fine. Where you got too much, you spill it. But instead of fill and spill, it's dump and pray. I mean, that's the reality, the new reality. And we're going to see more of these kind of droughts. Every time we had a drought in 91, we had one in 76. Those could have been the same kind of disasters we're having today. But in those days, the rules were different. So you're going to see more of this as we go forward. And I think they see this as an opportunity to restructure ag completely. Because what's going to happen in the Central Valley is farmers the last 10 years, when you go to a bank to borrow money, especially for a 5-year or 10-year development loan to put in almonds or pistachios even take longer, the bank says, I want to see a reliable source of water. So you say, well, I have my wells, and they show well logs and show your production, or I have a contract from the Bureau for so much water, and then the banker makes the loan. Well, when the bankers look at it now, they're going to say, well, wait a second, your surface supply contracts are, you know, may or may not be there because the fish and the ducks and everybody else comes in front of you. Even the 1870 water rights are not even secured anymore. Then they're going to look at your well, and they're going to say, well, wait a minute, the State Water Resources Control Board, as of last week, the governor has appointed them to start looking at groundwater control, the same gal who's running your surface water. Now, if I was a banker, and I used to be on a bank board, at some point you have to ask the question, does this farmer who walks in here and wants a 10-year loan to develop trees, does he really have an adequate water supply?
Yeah, does he have a prayer's chance in hell of actually getting the water?
Maybe he does, but what if we get two dry years and he's out of business and I've got a loan? I think the environmental movement sees this as an opportunity to change the economic structure where bankers will say, well, here's the deal. You only have really so much water. So if you've got 500 acres, you can plant 100 acres of permanent crops. The rest of the land is going to sit there. If it's a real wet year and surface supply come in, go plant some corn or go plant, you know, something. And if there's no water, it's going to sit. And that's kind of what, you know, Governor Babbitt, who was the Secretary of Interior for Clinton, told a lot of the farmers in West Side 25 years ago, don't plant permanent crops because you're going to get intermittent supplies in the future. Well, they knew that then, that where they were heading this thing to.
See,
and the unfortunate thing, the farmers did plant permanent crops, because bottom line, economically, they couldn't afford to raise the other stuff.
Well, okay, that makes sense.
So they kind of backed them into a corner, and unfortunately, every time they take away a little bit of water, it didn't, you know, as long as you got a wet year, you keep by, then all of a sudden that real dry year comes and you've got this disaster that you're seeing now. There's people ripping out 1,000-acre blocks of almonds as we speak. And there's a lot of people who aren't ripping them out yet, but have no clue where they're going to get the water.
Yeah, see, that's...
Well, I think you're going to just see, and I think we've already seen these big orchards just dying, you know, dying out in the field.
If we don't change our philosophy from a socialist to that we can't fix any problem unless we go back to nature, to a more capitalistic approach that we have to be good to the environment, but we can fix things with today's technology, and we can figure out ways to make things work. If we don't take that American can do it attitude on this whole water productivity issue, and instead of this we can't do anything, or the world's, you know, we're going to have a disaster.
Sure.
And the rest of the world is gearing up for it. That's why the rest of the world, you know, in Saudi Arabia and those places, they put in desalt, they're farming the desert, they're feeding their people. We're not facing reality here.
Okay? No, and we're going to wind up dependent on them, which has always worked out so well
exactly.
for us. We need to take a really quick break here, or we'll have them all at the end, which actually kind of works for me, but doesn't work for the station. We need to thank our advertisers. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. This is We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
From the mountains of fame, to the river so deep, I must be looking for something, something sacred I lost. But the river is wide, and it's too hard to cross.
Wait till the water is dry. We might watch our whole life pass us by. Let's go wait till the
Bob, what are we listening to here? Bob, Blue Lagoon?
That's,
what was that?
Boys to Men, Let's Don't Wait Till the Water Runs Dry.
Oh, okay.
I need to get out more.
Obviously.
On the Quiet Storm edition of We the People.
The Quiet Storm. That's a good one. I like that. Hey, okay, so Dennis?
Yeah.
I forgot where we left off.
Well, you know, I get one of the questions I get asked a lot by farmers and people, business people down here is, well, these leaders we have, you know, both parties, but more one than the other, I mean, are they ever going to see the light to what the damage they're doing? I go, well, these are the same people that just ran up a $17.5 trillion debt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so the reality is, if they can't see what they're doing to the world economy, you're probably not going to see what they're doing to the San Joaquin Valley. You know, if you're... I hate to say it, but if you're too dumb to figure out one problem, you're probably too dumb to figure out the other one, huh?
Yeah, well...
Or I don't say shit dumb, because I don't think they're dumb. I'll be honest with you. I think they have a different vision of life than we
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
Huh?
I don't think they're... I think they're dumb like a fox.
Mm-hmm.
Well...
I mean, Dianne Feinstein has, for years, I'm going to present legislation. The only legislation that woman has ever presented was the San Joaquin River Restoration to take our waterway. Since all the proposed legislation, including the one she did, 3 weeks ago, has yet to hit the Senate. Now, maybe I'm wrong, maybe she's going to actually do something, but what she said is off the table for her legislation is the only thing that will begin to solve this problem.
Yeah, it is, it's one of those things where you know, people thought with the Delta smelt, they really thought that they wouldn't, like my mom's like, they're not going to really do that, honey. They're not going to really shut off all the water for that little fish. And I'm like, no, mm-hmm. no, Mom, they will.
Did.
Yeah, they will.
Do you know the numbers about 2 or 3 weeks when we had that storm hit? You remember?
Yeah.
There was 50,000 acre foot a day a day in 24 hours going into the ocean. The pumps at the Delta, they could pump about 20,000 acre foot a day if they would have turned them on. They ran three pumps out of the 10. Even when that massive water was hitting the ocean for a week or two, they didn't run the pumps. Then the last storm, it was 25,000 acre foot a day hitting, and they were pumping 4,000. Okay, so it's not only that they're putting water into the fell, they're just wasting. They're not running the pumps because they say, well, the pumps were attracting too many fish, and it ground up like 120 baby salmons. So for 120 fish, we're going to have people run out of water. I mean, you ask who's going to go extinct here? It's going to be human beings here if they continue thinking like this.
Well, I've always believed that these folks are not going to be threatened with their jobs, and I'm talking about Feinstein and
right.
Pelosi and these folks, until their constituents have to start recycling sewage water,
right.
or paying, you know, $4 for a head of lettuce. That's where they'll understand it, is until we get there. And that may be too late. But the
problem is, I think it's going to be too late. Here's the other problem. The media, not you guys, but the general media, is convincing the people in California that this is not Dianne and Pelosi's fault and Dianne Feinstein's fault. It's a drought, okay? So people are going to say, well, look, it wasn't their fault. But no, but if you don't look at the facts and the numbers and what's going on behind the scenes, just the general 38 million people, it's not raining, which is true. So when they see $4 lettuce, they tell them, well, it wasn't their fault. They didn't do it, but they really are doing it. Huh?
Yeah, they are. They are doing it. They're not smart enough to save the water when it does come.
Well, it's just, again, it's the politics of scarcity. You know,
right.
We've got to make sure that we don't have enough so that we can fight over the scraps, so that we can overlook the base problem, which is the fact that we're not managing our resources for utilization. We're managing them for,
right.
You know, scarcity. So we can take them away from people, because obviously if we don't have enough, people can't have any.
And I think part of what irritates me the most is they're the smartest people in the room. They know what's best. They know the best way to figure it out. They don't listen to the experts on this because they're the elected. They're the experts.
Well, just recently, Dianne Feinstein came out and says she wants to relook at the San Joaquin River Restoration Bill and wants to take another look at it because, you know, it's causing problems. And we're thinking, we told you for 15 years that, number one, it's going to be a $1 billion project. And NRDC told her it was going to be $250 million. Now they're talking maybe $2 billion. We told them it wouldn't work. Everything we told them was going to happen has happened. Now she says the little experiment may not be working. Okay, well, this experiment.
Yeah, like that was a big surprise, and that's
right.
The first time she ever heard it.
Shocking.
Yeah, so what you have is, as you said, it's not scary. It's like, what's that guy that was Obama's chief of staff? Don't let any good crisis go to waste.
Oh, yeah, Rahm Emanuel.
Right, instead of using this crisis to actually fix the problem, they're going to use the crisis to take away groundwater, to make the next major mistake. I mean, if they can convince the public, which is hopefully you guys can convince the public, that these crises that these people are creating, and we're letting them fix it. For example, when the banks got in trouble by making loans at 125% of the value of homes, instead of saying that these people don't know what they're doing, we bail them out, and we got the same people who got us in trouble still running the place. That's exactly what's happening with water.
Because we forced banks to loan to people who couldn't pay them back in the first
place.
They never had a prospect of paying them back. So just like this, you know, we get rid of the water when we have no prospect of water coming, and now we have a water problem.
Right.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Dennis, at this end of the state, they want, I mean, consistently, every plan that comes out, the Klamath dams are the basically the payoff to the environmentalists for
right.
solving the problems down where you are. So in order for you guys to get solutions, the folks up north have to decimate their county.
Right. They're playing one group against them.
Exactly.
It's back to the capitalist socialist thing. Instead of telling all the capitalists, let's bake pies, they're going to have the capitalists fighting over the pie that's left.
Yeah.
And they're going to make sure nobody gets to bake another pie.
Sure. So in order to get Sites Reservoir down there by Oroville, so in order to get that project, they're going to have to, they're going to be, you know, held down and given a noogie and told that, you know, if they want sites, they got to give up the Klamath dams. Well, why would we take out perfectly good hydroelectric dams?
Exactly. Plus, we're borrowing money to do it in Oregon, aren't we?
Ugh. And it's a mess. I mean, it's a mess. Your Klamath, and of course, I always go back to the beginning. It's supposed to be for fish habitat. Well, the Klamath is inhospitable to fish in its natural state. You know, they wouldn't even let their horses drink out of it back in the olden days. But they refused to see any of that.
Right. Well, that's the dilemma we have, is getting the people, the general public, to understand. And it's very hard because most people don't understand it. They just care if the water comes out of the faucet.
Well, I think the people that use the water, and I got to say use the water wisely, understand the problem. The people that don't understand the problem are the people in the big metropolitan areas that don't know where all this comes from, and that's where the education has to go, because I think we're kind of preaching to the choir. The big metropolitan areas where the votes are, that's where we got to make a bigger impact and get these folks to understand what's happening, to change the mindset and get some of these people out of office that don't know what the heck they're doing.
Yeah, I got a phone call from a radio program in L.A., Southern California, and I think it was a Fox affiliate, and the gal was real nice, but she was asking about water issues, and I tried to explain to her. I said, well, do you know where, you know, Shasta is? No. Do you know where San Luis Reservoir is? No. You ever heard of the aqueduct? No. You ever heard of the San Joaquin River? No. Well, do you know where you get your water?
No.
She goes, I don't have a clue where I get our water. All right.
Yeah, was that?
A resident of California.
Yeah, exactly.
Has no clue.
Exactly. Well, they have to play and know that their water rates are going up in Southern California. But you see, there again, as long as the politicians can blame it on a farmer using it in almonds, or they can blame it on a drought, then they can misguide the solution. The bottom line is, I don't think they're afraid of a crisis, these people that are running the show.
No, they're absolutely not.
In fact, they're using the crisis. Huh?
Yeah, they're not afraid of a crisis, and they're counting on the fact that, 1% of our population farms?
Yeah, 1 or 2%, yeah.
Yeah, so, what a great deal. You know, you can blame that 1% and the ability of you guys to not only get through the crisis, but keep producing food and educate the another 99% of the public.
I mean, yeah, because back in the Depression, I believe that 20 or 30% of the population were farmers, and those 30% were related to 30% of the population that wasn't. So you have 60% of the population either knew or relatively knew what was going on. You know, today you got 2% farming, and another 2% are related to them, so you got 4% have any, you know, direct. And then you got some people with common sense, but unfortunately not enough.
Hey, could you guys put that in the water when we get this whole thing fixed? We could use an additive on that. I'd like to. We need to take our final break here. We got jammed up. I knew if we were tardy on breaks, we'd be all at the end. But when we come back, I want you to make sure and let people know where this water is going. It's not going to farmers. It's not going to us. I want you to talk about the duck thing and all that, because you know there's a lot of people don't know about that either. So we're going to come right back with Dennis Prosperi, top off the hour, and then we'll be followed by Sovereign Minds. They have George DeFilippo, Don't Be a Victim of Violence. So you got some good stuff coming up here on KCNR 1460 AM.
Inflatable pool full of dad's hot air. Well, I was 3 years old, splashing everywhere. So began my love affair with water. On the riverbank, with all my friends, a big old rope tied to a limb. And you're a big old wuss if you don't jump in the water. Cigarette spark will burn the whole town up. That old well is plumb dry. The city put a limit on the water you can buy. We don't mind, cause round here we save water, drink beer. Eyes cold, can you raise them up?
Lower the drinking age. You solve the problem.
There
I shouldn't give him that idea, cause I'll probably do it.
Yeah, I'm going to drink wine.
Yeah, they all got to smoke a pot now. Yeah, drink wine. There you go. That still keeps us in business. Good one. Okay, so, Dennis, tell people where the water's really going to go. Because that's the irritating part, too.
Okay, what's happening right now, just to put it, so the best way to explain this is, let's go back to the guys with the oldest water rights, the 1870 water rights, the exchange contractors.
Sure.
They got cut from 100% when National, and then they got cut to 75, then they got cut to 40. And when they cut to 40 was precisely when Dianne Feinstein came out with her supposed legislation about allowing transfers between state and federal projects. And if you remember, our newsletter came out and said, transfers to who and or for who? Because the question was, at that time, the state contractors, which are half farmers south of, in the south half of our valley and metropolitan in San Diego, were already cut to zero. The federal projects on the east side of the valley were already cut to zero. The west side federal projects were already cut to zero. So it was like, who are you going to transfer water to? Everybody's at zero. But the exchange contractors were still at 75%. So when they came out with that, or she came out with that deal allowing the state to do that, about a week later, the Federal Bureau of Reclamation, which is federal, told exchange contractors, we're going to cut you to 40% because we've got to save water in case the state needs it for public health and safety, the state project. At that point, they sent out a letter to all the districts in the federal, gave them 10 days to report what they would need for public health and safety in their districts. Then they came out and said, okay, the pumps that are running the delta, because I told you about the 50,000 acre foot hitting the delta and they're only pumping like 5,000 acre foot of it. Those pumps were designated to pump water to the San Luis Reservoir strictly for public health and safety. And then if they got any more than that, they had to pay back last year's 350,000 acre foot that the farmers already paid for that didn't exist. Then the exchange contractors came after that. But in the meantime, they decided, the state came out about 3 weeks ago and 2 weeks ago and said, we want 2 years supply of public health and safety behind the reservoirs, which puts the exchange contractors now at zero if that happens. They're waiting for that ruling in the next few days. Here's the funny part. Last June, July, August, September, there wasn't a half a year's water supply at the San Luis Reservoir for public health and safety, and the governor did not declare a drought. Now that we're in it and it's tight, and everybody and there's enough water being pumped for public health and safety, they want 2 year supply of public health and safety, which is going to bring those guys from 40% down to zero. So it's like we went from being really stupid. Now we're going to go completely the other way. That's why I say this is a man-made, manufactured shutdown.
Yeah, and there.
And meantime, water. Meantime, they're dumping water in the ocean. And by March 1st, by the way, which started already, if the dams and the Fryant system get back to 400,000 acre feet, which doesn't look like it's going to happen, they could actually start the river restoration again and start losing water.
Okay, so you got any ideas on what people can do?
Well, there's a rally going to happen. I think the exchange contract Fireball, they're going to have a big water rally because, I mean, they're really up against it. They've got hundreds of dairies out there and no feed, and there's almonds planted with no wells, and so they're lobbying Washington. Feinstein and Costin and the liberals have come out now asking the State Water Resource Control Board, not telling them not to do anything different, just saying please do the best you can in the situation. Well, first thing they can do is turn those damn pumps on, and number second thing they could do is tell we don't need 2 year supply of public health and safety. Metropolitan Los Angeles is already sitting on a 2 year supply in their lakes down south because they've got it pre-stored. So there's almost like you have to have a 4 year supply of public health and safety, and meantime you're going to devastate ag from the Delta south in the next 3 months.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I've been hearing a lot of rumbles about the beef industry and what's going on there with this drought. It's not going to be good. I mean, these guys are selling off their herds. They can't afford the feed. There is no green grass that typically feeds the cattle this time of year. So they're having to buy hay to feed their cows.
No hay to buy.
Yeah, and then they're starting to have to pump water.
Nobody can grow hay because you need water for that.
Yeah, and so it doesn't pay to raise cows, so they're all going to the slaughterhouse, or they're getting shipped out of state to where there is feed. And what do you think that's going to do to the price of hamburger?
The price of milk to the dairyman went from $13, $14 a hundredweight a few years ago, and they were making money at that price. Then at $17 and $18, they were losing money because of the price of feed. Now it's at $22 a hundredweight. People are worried about the price of milk in the store. Okay.
It, oh,
Oh, it's going to get worse.
It's going to get worse, yeah.
And again, that's why I say when you go to the store and you're paying $18 a pound for hamburger, and not the good hamburger, I'm talking the, mm-hmm. you know, the 8% or 25% fat hamburger, people are going to come unglued, and that's when they're going to have to start understanding what's
the bad part is.
The reason
that's
for
when
it.
The politics of scarcity have hit fever pitch.
Right.
Hey, in the last we've got, you know, like 30 seconds. Hey, the rally in Fireball. When do you think that's going to be?
You know, I just got a notice. It's going to be in the next day or two.
Oh,
it's coming. It's
the
exchange contractors are putting it on. I don't have it in front of me.
Hey, how about this? Shoot us an email and we'll send it out to people.
Okay, good. I will.
Yeah, because, you know, the folks up here, we do follow what's going on at the other end of the state, as I'm sure you follow ours. Because it's all, at the end of the day, it's all connected, and we're getting screwed over by the same guys.
Right, exactly.
Hey, Dennis?
Great show, Dennis. Thank you very much for all that information.
You are a champion. Thanks very, very much. And your organization is awesome. FamiliesProtectingTheValley.com. Go there, get the updates. They have fabulous newsletters.
Well, thank you guys for the job you're doing.
Thanks, Dennis. Happy to have you on anytime.
Okay, take care.
Sovereign Minds is next at KCNR Shasta Redding.